Black Culture, a show shining a light on the work that mob around the continent are doing to protect, reclaim, rebuild and respect culture. From pre-colonial Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture and law to caring for country, language revival practices and black pop culture.
No more whispering in our minds.
Protect, reclaim, rebuild and respect black culture with Sienna Stubbs from 9 till 10, continuing the legacy that is Let's Talk.
Namidi Bookmark, you are listening to Triple A's Let's Talk Black Culture with Sienna Mayadoramedi Stubbs. And today I have a very special guest. But before we begin, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which I am recording from, the Yagara and Turrbal people. And I want to acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded and that these have always been places of teaching, learning, and that we shall never forget that. Today we've got a very special show lined up, as I am speaking with my beautiful sister, Rosalie Nyilapa Pearson. Hello, Ababa.
Hello, Ababa.
Hello.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me.
This is so exciting.
I think it's so special. And, you know, I wouldn't be where I am today without you. And I feel like I'd love to speak about it.
Of course. But I am here because of you as well.
I'd love to hear how you introduce yourself, how you present yourself to the world. What is your introduction?
Well, I have lots of different introductions, but, you know, different for my family and different for people away. But I guess because I built my career off the name Rosalie Pearson. Hi, my name is Rosalie Pearson, and I am a artist and a creative producer, director, slash a woman of lots of different knowledge and not a lot of clarity around a lot of it as well. Still developing is my introduction.
And yeah. Where do you come from?
I am from Irkalla in northeast Arnhem Land, and I am a Mangalili woman whose homelands and estates reside over at Yarrabee. That's me.
I love that.
Yeah.
I really would love to hear more about, you know, Yarrabee and how you connect to that area. But before we go into that, could you please share a little bit about your story and how you've come to be at this place?
Yep.
In your life?
So, I'm born and bred. You know, my mother is a Yolngu woman from northeast Arnhem Land, and my father is a white Australian with Scottish heritage from Victoria. And that he travelled all the way up here and met my mother and got married and had me and my younger brother, Ariane, who's really quite famous. A lot of people would call that him. He's in the band East Journey, and he's also a culture advisor and a music producer. And then I guess I went to boarding school. I was lucky to go to an incredible school in Queensland, Kuralban International School. And there I got to meet a lot of people from all over the world and make friends with lots of people from all over the world. And I studied art there as well. I graduated valedictorian of arts. Uh-huh. And after that, I wanted to go and pursue a career in international studies at QUT, but I kind of walked past this audition for like the dance auditions at QUT. And I just it set something off in my head. And I walked into my first lecture to do like international studies, and I just went, I'm not supposed to be here.
Wow.
And I left, but I was kind of like, I didn't even think then that, I'll do dance, you know? So I came back home for a while to reconnect with my family. And then of course, you came into our world. And so I was like, I can't leave my baby sister. I have to be here at least for a year so that she knows who I am.
Yeah.
And then a year in, I realized that NASDA Dance College was actually auditioning. So I flew to Darwin to audition for NASDA Dance College. And I got in. And so the following year, I went to NASDA. And I studied for 3 years.
Wow.
And graduated, and then have been able to tour the world, tour most of Australia, and not just as a dancer. I got thrown into doing the theatre and then the production side of stuff. So stage management and tour management and production management, which is why now I think, you know, me producing my own works, I can do that because I've got all that knowledge. Always learning.
Do you feel like you can lend, you know, this is sort of like a sarcastic question, but like how much of that do you lend to your black culture, and how did your Yolngu identity shape your journey through your life?
So I didn't really... Like, I knew I was Yolngu, but I didn't really grow up around it because my parents split, and I was raised by my white father. And then I kind of, it was weird, like, when I went to school, no one kind of treated me as, I don't know, gosh, you're making me try to remember things. I just think, yes, I felt different, but I didn't understand why. And then when I went to boarding school, it was just so amazing having other, like, black friends around and to go to school with from different cultures who really kind of bolstered me and was around and supported me and didn't treat me different. And then I guess going to NASDA, like, coming back home and reconnecting with my family for a few years, that really kind of strengthened my relationship with my community and my family. And then to leave that and go to NASDA Dance College, which is, you know, black fellas from all over Australia, and learning all their different languages and dances and you know, trying and understanding or trying to learn more about, you know, like the black history of Australia, because in our era we weren't taught that in our schools, you know.
Yeah, so to be able
to go somewhere where I could get my teeth into, you know, like the trauma that a lot of families, a lot of the community, but also the incredible strength and the culture that is still accessible for us to be able to learn, and then going to different countries and learning their, like, stories really kind of made me want to strengthen my understanding of my culture. So yeah, that's where it all began, I guess.
I remember you in this chapter of your life. I was quite young, but I remember you having the most exciting friends and, you know, people around you that I always looked up to, you know, you and your beautiful friends. Like, where did they come from, and, you know, all the different mobs that you were surrounded by, you know, were you learning, what types of dances were you learning? How did that shape the feeling of black culture to you? Because I feel like you were surrounded by so much culture there.
Well, I guess there were a lot of students from Queensland and far north Queensland, as well as up in the Torres Strait. So we learn a lot of dances from different islands in the Torres Straits, from Baru, from Danle, Saibai. And then we also learned dances from Larolmob, which is from Mornington Island. And that was old man, I can't say his name now, but he's passed. And his family would come down and teach us. And then we'd skip across to New South Wales Mob, who teach us as well. So, like, from Dornoch and that mob. We didn't have a lot of students coming from Perth or Western Australia. There were some students from Adelaide, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to have gone to Adelaide to teach some of my dances to students there, and I've learnt some of their dances from Ghana Mob as well. There were just lots from everywhere.
I love the feeling of that chapter in your life for you, because that brings back so many memories for me.
And it was also, you know, like, all of us were all training to become professional dancers, you know, professional as in, like, in terms of, like, a Western sense of professional dance, which is learning all those Western dance techniques, so that, you know, we were going out and doing contemporary dance and being able to do that with, you know, without causing injury to our bodies, because we'd strengthened and trained ourselves in a way that we could, you know, have careers in dance for a very long period of time.
Yeah, wow. How did that take you on to, you know, the next chapter of your life, which involved, you know, all of that touring? And where were the places that took you?
Well, I kind of started my own dance company for a while, just doing a whole bunch of corporate stuff. And then, because, you know, I think when you're first starting out, and I was old as it for a dancer, like, I started training when I was 23. Most people start dancing when they're 3 years old.
Mm.
So I was just wading through the world and going, like, reaching out and touching stuff and going, like, am I capable of doing that? Yes, let me try that. Okay, let me try that. How do I apply for a grant? How do I do this? Oh, you're going on tour. I can come and help. Like, you know, so a lot of stuff was just learning by doing. So,
and finding, you know, those opportunities.
And being invited to join these things, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I've toured with bands. I've toured with dance crews.
Name drop.
So I've, you know, toured with John Butler Trio. I've toured with Tukimala.
Tukimala.
So we've done, like, pretty much all of Australia. I've been to America, and pretty much all the states in America. I also toured with this beautiful children's show with an Australian company inside art called Saltbush Children's Touring Carpet.
Wow.
Ooh, what a mouthful. And that has, like, taken me to, China,
yeah,
France,
wow,
India, the Americas, all over Australia, you know. So very, very amazing. And and then, of course, I've worked with local legends as well, doing various things. So, yeah. And
such a special life.
Pardon?
Such a special life.
And it's, you know, it's really exciting when you're young, and I got tired, you know. It's a
deadly game. It's the creative, because you've got to put so much of yourself into it, right?
Yeah, of course. But also, it's like, the traveling is quite exhausting as well. You know, and when you do it for years and years and years and years and years, I think, you know, like, there was a calling for me to come home. I could feel it, you know, like, yeah. So when I came home, and mum took, were you there? I don't know if you were there. Mum took us out to Yanglumbi, and we went to go and get, Lakin. The mangrove worms, and that first worm that I ate, and I just was like, I just hadn't felt grounded for a very long time, and it grounded me, like, so crazy. It was amazing.
Wow.
Very important.
I love memories like that really, you know, put you in your place and remind you where you are.
Yeah.
If you're listening to the radio right now, you're listening to Triple A's Let's Talk Black Culture with Sienna Mayadoramadi Stubbs, and I'm speaking with my beautiful big sister, Rosalie Pearson, or Rosie. So you've told us a little bit about your journey to this point, and how you were, you know, touring and, you know, going globally. How did you then position yourself sort of in back into Yolngu culture, and, you know, how are you using your skills now, the skills that you learnt abroad and globally to benefit your community, and what were some of the things you that led to following that?
It just really boiled down to, like, I was unwell. I was spiritually, I just felt like I was spread all over the world around Australia just with all the touring and stuff, and that I really needed to make my life simple again. So I packed up my life in Sydney and I left and I moved back home, and I started this job with the Stars Foundation, which is like a in-school support for Indigenous girls. And so I was there for 5 years, and we actually helped 7 girls graduate, and for the first time 7 girls to attain an ATAR score.
From that
school. So that was pretty amazing.
That was amazing.
You were a part of it as well.
Yeah, I grew up with Stars, and I feel like we'll have to honour an episode solely for that. But could you share a little bit about the work that you did when you were with Stars, and, you know, the importance of guiding, you know, Yolngu and First Nations girls through from, you know, first year of school to year 12? Like, how did that impact you and your just guidance on that?
I wish, you know, like when I was in high school, that we had those kinds of places as First Nations women while we're studying, because it's hard enough already. The percentages of like Indigenous women graduating high school was insanely low. And I truly believe it's because we just never had that place that we could go and just talk about what was going on, and people who were genuinely there to help us and, you know, help us even with like our homework, help us with stuff that was going on at home, help us with stuff that was going on with our relationships with people, and then bringing in services, like bringing all the services into this space, and knowing that all these services could come to this space and help all our girls was so incredible. And I think that is one of the most main reasons as to why these girls had the confidence and the ability to be able to complete year 12 and get that ATAR score. And then, you know, like, I mean, you guys should go and read the Stars Foundation annual reports about like the increased number of graduates of Indigenous girls since the Stars Foundation has existed. So, yeah, like, you know, we used to do morning breakfasts on Friday. We used to grab the girls and take them, and would do, like, different activities around the community as a part of our community response. So we'd go to hold the pound and look after the dogs there and take them for a run, and also do community barbecues and help with fundraising for things.
It really does help, like, you know, just going back to breakfast, like putting on a breakfast for someone and knowing that when you show up to school you are gonna get that nutritional, you know, resource, fruits and all of the things, knowing that you had a space at school was so special.
It was like we'd have like a salon. We'd create like a salon and have like salon days for the girls to make themselves feel like amazing. And so sometimes we'd have special events where we'd take them out and, you know, get their hair done and their makeup done and do a photo shoot and, yeah, lots of different amazing things.
Yeah. Why do you think one of the biggest ones was
One of the biggest ones was like getting their driver's license. Like that was huge.
It's that self-determination, right?
Yeah, and it's really difficult to get those services in remote areas. So like for them, that was like, wow. And you know that like a driver's license leads to you being able to apply for a whole bunch of things or, you know, get a mobile phone and, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Exactly. No, because I think just for us young girls, it was so important to be seen and like to know that we had that space there where we could like achieve anything that we wanted to. And I think, you know, I have to lend a piece of my current, you know, being to STARS because STARS were the actual organization who brought me to Brisbane to look at, you know, the university that I went to, QUT. And, you know, like to think that that was the first stepping stone to where I am today.
That's so special.
It's so special. It changed my life. And, yeah, the work that you did within that for the girls in Yirrkala was so special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt very privileged to be there, I'll tell you that. So I guess from there, well, I mean, carrying on from that story is just like, that's when I met my husband and now we have two beautiful boys and my husband is a musician. And so...
Who does he play for again?
Oh, he plays for Andrew Gordawui Band.
Who we have on this show often and we love... Andrew Gururu Band in at AAA, always roaming the airwaves.
Love. it's always what's in that, our house and in our car.
What's that story of, like, you know, Bippy and all of the team there and your involvement in that?
With what, sorry? Oh, with the band. I mean, if anyone's whoever's married to a musician understands that all they think about is music. So it was just like constantly surrounded by music. But, you know, outside of that, like my husband and I run a production company as well. So we do like a lot of films and music and photo shoots and, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff. But, you know, he also runs a few of the festivals around the community. And the biggest one is East Dunham Live, which is coming up in August.
But, what's, you know, that like involved?
Just huge stages, lots of lights, lots of artists from like locally, but also we try and bring in a big artist. I think I've forgotten who we've got this year.
It's a spoiler. It's a surprise.
It's a surprise.
But no. So if you're comfortable, I'd love to hear a little bit of what it's like to be a mother to two beautiful Yolngu black kids and what that, you know, how that shapes your vision of like black culture. Like, how does it change when you become a mother?
Oh, everything changes when you become a mum. It's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life and it's the most loving thing I've ever done in my life. I mean, even when you were born I was like, oh my god, how am I gonna love anybody else more than this? And then it's like my nephews, like, how am I gonna love anyone more than this?
I know.
So there's that. And I'm, you know, like, we make sure that they go to school at Yirrkala, so that English is predominantly what I grew up with as a kid, and then I had to relearn my language. And so they're going to Yirrkala
school
to be able to, so that they don't have that disconnect of their language. And there's always family around, and always that thing of like, oh, that's your wakoga, that's your Māori, and that's your Amla, and that's your, you know, your ama, you know?
Yeah.
And just everyone constantly reinforcing our kinship relations and talking to the boys in their language and, you know, taking them out to ceremonies and, and you know, sitting down and listening to Manike and getting them Burma and, you know, you know how obsessed these boys are.
I know. And that's part of the beauty of what I love about, you know, us as Yolngu people, but also, like, you know, that can extend to other Black Yolngu First Nations families out there, you know, our kinship relationships. And I feel like for Yolngu, it's very, very integral for our, you know, being is that relationship. I mean, and the kinship.
It's the only thing that really matters.
Honestly, when you think about it, it really does shape who we are and our position within, you know, community.
And how we treat each other and how we show respect for each other. And,
I love every time, you know, when we first started raising when your first son was born, you know, how he knows me as Amma, which is mum, you know.
Yeah.
Amma Sienna. And he doesn't know me as anything else.
No, of course not. And but so, also all his mothers, all our sisters, you know, it's Amma so-and-so and Amma so-and-so and Amma...
Amma Warangu and...
Yeah.
You know, it is, that's what I love, just, you know, coming back home is hearing that and, you know, it lends itself to, you know, language and kinship. I think kinship and connection for us as, you know, Yolngu and First Nations people is really important, and it's something that you realise when you move away from community. And whether that is geographically, like myself, or just socially, you realise the difference between that and not that. You know, connection and disconnect. And it just, I think it really shows that us as, you know, Yolngu family it's so special. That kinship,
that's what brings me back to the whole reason why I had to leave Sydney, was because I was really missing that connection with my family, you know.
What do your weekends look like? Sometimes you're going out, you know, to country, and can you tell us a little bit about your homeland and where you go and what you're doing to connect?
So we go pretty much anywhere we can.
And what's your favorite?
Weather and the tides are doing.
Always depends on the tide.
I'm so obsessed with fishing at the moment, and like they just walk around with their spears and trying to spear. Oh, look, there's a fish in the grass. Okay, great. And they're just like constantly saying they want to get mandjal, like stingray and maple, fresh like oysters. And
you're making me jealous.
I know. And so like we go up to, you know, mum's country, Gularunga, and then sometimes we go to Bulka. I mean, last night we just went down to Crocodile Creek. And had a fire on the beach there last night, which was really nice.
So
we do a whole bunch of activities. We live pretty remote, but we live in a place where nature is all around, and it's just so beautiful.
How do you lend that connection to country and nature? Like when we think about that, I feel like living in the city, you don't forget about it, but it's hard to connect a little closer to that.
I mean, I always used to try and find pockets of like places to go to, you know. I lived in Brisbane for a while as well, so I love Brisbane.
Wow. I'm really stealing your story, hey, like I just copied and pasted.
Just like pulling me around. Except except you get to do all the cool stuff like be live on radio.
I love hearing about that story. But I'm so jealous of you being back home and what
home
that means.
Home
will
always be here.
Yeah, home will always be there. I think, you know, I just think of the beach and the sand and how do you think that lends itself to your creativity, like, and you as a person, like, country and...
It's everything.
I think of, you know, the way that you used to dance with me and, you know, that feeling, that movement of flow and imagining the sand between your fingers and... Can you speak a little bit about that? I feel like that's a non-question, but it's, you understand, you get me, right?
Yeah, I do totally get you. You're a very a sensory person. And so, like, you react a lot to, or you respond a lot to the things that are around you. And you have an ability to have your observant, you know, incredibly observant. So, like, those things, like feeling the sand between your feet and what that particular sand is compared to, like, when you go somewhere else and how different it is there.
Yeah.
Or even, like, you know, like me having that lichen.
Yes.
Because, you know, the
mangrove worm,
like the taste of that, you also taste earth on which that mangrove, and I think that's what was, like, landed in me as well, like knowing that I was back home on my country tasting the earth, my mother earth, you know. So, like, that's what I'm talking about. If I'm outside and I'm looking at leaves and the way dripping, or like the shadow that it creates, I'm constantly thinking, how can I use that in my creative practice?
I think it really does shape the way, you know, our creative practices, but also, like, life and the way that we travel through it. And that storytelling, right? So, you know, makes me think of your exciting opportunity that you have coming up. Did you want to speak a little bit about that? I feel like, I think I know what it is. Is it a show in Gadigal, on Gadigal land in Sydney?
It is indeed. It's Song Spirals, which is like a immersive dance theatre piece. So it's got like projection and music and dance, and was inspired by our mum's book by the same name, Song Spirals, which won the Prime Minister's Literary Award in 2020. And, you know, we were talking about, like, how nature and the things around us inspire us. Well, inside that book, it talks about the song lines that are here and that we are connected to, and it speaks about the women's role of milkari, which is keening, and specifically keening the song lines from here, the ones that us women can do. And inside that book, you know, they write the translations of what the song spirals or the milkari or the song lines are, and in it gives those beautiful descriptions of what they're singing about. You know there's that section of our grandmother who it opens with,
her death,
the keening of our grandmother who's Gormach, he's a Gormach woman, and she's keening about her being a whale, and she's with her ancestors in the water, and they take their last breath and into the deep water, never to resurface again, you know. And it's just incredibly poetic. So I was so inspired by it. I was like, oh, man, I need to make a work out of this. And so we've done it. So
what
is going to the Sydney Opera House?
Can you tell us a little bit about the journey of creating that and how
Oh my gosh, it's been so intense.
just a light question to finish off.
It was like another baby, like it started in 2020 and took us 4 years to get to this point with change of like dancers, with change of producers, with change of locations, with intense film shoots and incredible dancers from Queensland and from WA. We've lost two of our mothers and an uncle during the process. One of my dancers has lost a son. It's just been incredible. But what's so great about it is that the response that we've been getting from everyone has been really fantastic. And then the fact that, you know, it's going to the Opera House is just insane. So
yeah, so that is really exciting. It really goes to show like your journey as a performer and an artist hasn't finished yet. And you know, will it ever? I don't think it ever will.
I don't think I can, you know, sometimes I'm one of those people that like I need to like be in something for a very long time and then I need to have a long break afterwards. But even in that long break, my brain is still going like, oh, that's really interesting. I want to make something with that. So even, you know, like things like getting into watercoloring, which I've never done before, has like been so therapeutic and calming, but it's still something artistic, so that's really nice.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I feel like, following that question, like what do you feel like you still have left in you, like what's to come? You know, I guess that show at the Sydney Opera House is your next big thing. What's your vision for your
at the moment? I'm experiencing deep rest because I feel like I haven't slept for 4 years because I've had like two babies, like, and then like a show, and then like I worked all the way through like before I had my kids and after I had my kids, and so there's a moment of deep rest, but there's also me kind of rethinking about how I do my work now. I think it's not so much working with lots of people. I think maybe more of on an individual thing. I really want to create a children's show about my clan.
Wow.
And our connection to the Milky Way.
I love that vision. Can you just quickly like talk about what's that connection to the Milky Way?
It's probably too
I know.
Long.
No, okay. Yeah, that's another show.
I think this is another show. Yeah, but it's basically maybe like about the, you know, the little possum and then the rope that heads up into the Milky Way and who climbs it and who's up in there. And
so special. Yeah. So special. I feel like I'm going to have to maybe read a little bit of that chapter from
That would be
the
amazing
book for our listeners online another time.
Yeah, that would be so good. I think that I'm kind of brewing into a reality probably at the end of this year.
Yeah, beautiful.
And then I'm just doing milk cutting workshops with Mum and our big sis, John Doyle, here with all the ladies, which is amazing.
About learning how to keen.
Yes, because I'm learning, and then we're all trying to, all the young crew as well, they all want to learn. So
That's so special, Abba.
Yeah, we were lucky we got a grant to be able to do that. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Lovely.
People. I know.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
I'm so grateful for all of that. And for learning your story a little more. And, you know, I've always been that little sister looking up to you with so much awe. And, you know, I feel like big sisters and sisterhood in our culture is so integral for, you know, our culture and connection and womanhood and just being there for each other.
It's the for, best.
That spans across like all black cultures, right? Like,
yeah, and it spans so across all generations.
All generations.
From back then all the way through.
I feel like you say the same thing as me. How do you say goodbye?
In Namayala.
Namayala.
George.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. You were listening to AAA's Let's Talk Black Culture. If you want to tune in again, tune into 98.9 FM on every Wednesdays, or tune into iHeartRadio, or you can head to our website at www.aaa.org.au. And really grateful, and see you next week. Nama yalala. Bye.
No more whispering in our mind.
Let's talk Monday to Friday at 9 a.m. on AAA Murray Country, the National Indigenous Radio Service and iHeartRadio. You can catch up on AAA.org.au. Proudly supported by the Community Broadcast Foundation.